I'm going to read from Luke chapter 19. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and he was wealthy. He wanted to see who Jesus was, but being a short man, he couldn't because of the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, "Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today." So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. All the people saw this and began to mutter, "He's gone to be the guest of a sinner." But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, "Look, Lord, here and now, I give half of my possessions to the poor, and if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount." Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost."
Actually, it'd be great if you could keep that little gospel open, because that's what we're going to do, read that story. And in a few minutes, I'm actually going to invite you to pray in response to what we learn as we look at it. I tell you that so you don't feel that I've kind of snuck up on you in any way. You know, Zacchaeus, it's a funny story. Where I come from back in Australia, it's actually regarded as a kid's story. And so I was planning to actually sing a couple of verses of a little kid's song to you, but after what we've just heard, I can't. I'll say it. Zacchaeus was a wee little man, and a wee little man was he. He climbed up in a sycamore tree for the Lord he wanted to see. But as I've thought about this story more and more and seen how brilliantly Luke, in just a few brushstrokes, paints a portrait of this little man, I realise it's not a kid's story at all. Zacchaeus lived in a world that's very different to the one that most of us live in. I don't mean that he lived in a different country or that he lived in a different century. I mean he lived in a tough, violent, dog-eat-dog world that was built on extortion, a world without compassion. I live in a polite, kind, gentle world, but I have a mate, a friend, who lives in a world like Zacchaeus lived in. My friend is in jail now for quite a while. In fact, I posted him a postcard today. But I saw a glimpse of the world that he lives in and how you fix things one day. I used to swim with him regularly in a swim squad, and we would turn up at the pool. There's a 25-metre pool, and there'd be other people training there. We were in a little squad of about eight people, and what we would do is we'd just ask if, say, there were two people in a lane, we'd ask if they might move over and swim two or three in a lane, and then eight of us would swim in one lane. Well, one day we turned up, and there was an individual in a lane and a couple in the next, and we asked him if he would move across and the eight of us would be happy to swim in one lane. He was from France, and that was what I know. I don't know his name, but he said no, he would not move, that he was here first, did not intend to move. So the eight of us tried to swim in the lane with him politely, and so on. We're swimming up and down, and after a few laps, as I'm trying to swim around him, I accidentally touched his feet. And he stood up in the shallow end of the pool, waving his arms, cranky and aggressive and so on. And I'm just a humble little baldy-headed clergyman. What am I going to do? I'm saying, I'm sorry. Next thing, my mate, who I'm telling you about, arrives, swims up, stands up. They're both up to about their waist in the water. And I thought, hello, what's going to happen here? And my mate stepped up beside this other bloke and showed his teeth. He looked at him and went, like this. Huh? And then he said, "If we have any more trouble with you," and this is this far from his face, he said, "If we have any more trouble with you, I will bite your expletive. I will bite your expletive nose off." And the other guy was in absolutely no doubt that it would happen. He turned the colour of the chlorinated water and just kind of got out of the pool. I was scared, right? And he was doing it to look after me. And now, here's the thing. Zacchaeus is the man who would offer to bite your nose off. Now, he may have needed to stand on a chair to do it, but he would have offered. Right? And so, a hard case. If you want to get a picture in your head of Zacchaeus, first century Danny DeVito. Got him? In your face, aggressive, hard case, successful. And guess what? The last person in the world that you would expect to become a Christian. Yeah? That how could he become a follower of Jesus? And, you know, maybe you think you might be the last person to ever follow Jesus. Well, it happens to Zacchaeus. Let's have a look how. If you have a look, page 68 of the booklet, let me read the story with you and make a few comments. Jesus entered Jericho and was passing through. If you've read Luke's Gospel, well, actually, if you haven't, I hope I might motivate you to do that. Please take the booklet with you. If you read it, you see, Luke's told us that right back from chapter 9, Jesus has, in Luke's words, set his face to walk to Jerusalem. And he's been walking to Jerusalem for a particular reason that we find out in a little while, for 10 chapters. And he's almost there. He's in Jericho, and Jericho was a major trading center. It was a place where the money and power, and it was a place to get rich. And one particular man had taken advantage of that. See verse 2. A man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. Zacchaeus, his name actually means clean or innocent. And I bet he was when his mum named him. But he hadn't lived that way. Tax collectors grew rich on the misery of their fellow citizens. The Jewish tax collectors collected tax on behalf of the occupying army of Rome. And on the basis of extortion and so on, they didn't just take what Rome wanted, they took as much as they could. And Zacchaeus was wealthy, and he'd done it. He was a collaborator with an occupying army. He was hated. And not only was he a tax collector, but notice Luke says he was a chief tax collector, literally an arch tax collector in the original. I don't know whether he employed other tax collectors or he was just kind of extra good at it, but Zacchaeus had dedicated his life to making money, and he'd done it very well. You ever think about that? Money's so powerful, isn't it? Money really just grabs hold of us. Why? I've thought lots about it. Tell you what I think. I think money offers us something, or two things that are so precious. Money offers us status and security. Status and security. By status, I mean the way the people around us treat us. You can call it love, or you can call it respect, or you can call it status. But if you have money, you get it. People treat you differently. Isn't that what it's all about? After all, the car, the house, the clothes, the right motels, you get treated differently. I've only ever flown first class once, and we flew Emirates, and these lovely little Thai ladies were there as they came and waited on me. Would you like more ice cream, Mr. Stewart? And I'll tell you something, it was good. It was good. You get treated differently. They didn't know I didn't belong there, but hey, you get treated differently. Status. And you know what? It's oxygen to our soul. We want to be treated differently. Or it offers us security, and that is the ability to control our world, to keep away unpleasant things, whether that's unpleasant temperatures through air conditioning or unpleasant people through gated estates. It offers us power to control our world. You know, there's a finance company in Australia at the moment, and their slogan that they're pushing is, own tomorrow. Own tomorrow. Isn't that saying something? If you have money, if you invest with us, you can have control. Do you know, the Bible says that we are wired up to serve something, and we will serve whatever it is that we think gives us status and security, whatever it is that tells us what we're worth and are we safe. In the Bible's terms, the word serve and the word worship are the same. We all have something at the center of our life that we worship, that controls our life, that we love, that we sacrifice for. Jesus says, or Jesus' word, for if we make money and possessions and what we own, if that's what our life is all about, Jesus' word for it is greed. Greed. Earlier on in the little booklet that you're holding in Luke's Gospel in chapter 12, he says, then he said to them, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed. A man's life does not consist in the abundance of his possessions. Do you see, he's defined greed. Greed is about believing that life is about an abundance of possessions. In other words, life is about how much stuff I own, what I have, what I own. And that's what life's all about. I'll tell you something strange. Jesus speaks about sex Occasionally. But he speaks about money all the time. Do you know why? My theory, money is sexier than sex. It is. Or at least say money is more seductive than sex in many ways. I'll give you a simple hint. If you are doing the wrong thing sexually, you know it. You do. No one ever said in the middle of adultery, whoa, wait a minute, you're not my husband. Or, whoa, you're not my wife. You know. But do you know what? No one thinks they're greedy. No one. We're not greedy. I've been in Christian ministry work for 25 years. And no one has ever come to me and said, Al, I'd like you to help me. I think I'm greedy. Never. I mean, I've had people come and say to me all sorts of other things that I've, you know, tried to help them with, whatever, but no one's ever been greedy. And we're not really, are we? We just need a little bit more, or we just look forward to the next thing, or that money, we can't really give it away because we need it. And you know what? Money's very personal. I speak all over the place in all sorts of different contexts about different subjects, but when I speak about money, the room gets very still and very quiet because you're talking about something that's right where we live. And Zacchaeus had dedicated his life to becoming rich, and he had been good at it, and he was, as we would say, successful. And yet something is wrong. You see verse 3? He wanted to see who Jesus was, but being a short man, he could not because of the crowd. Why does he want to see Jesus? He's rich, he's successful, he's powerful. Why? There's some aching emptiness in his life. And I wonder if maybe he'd lived long enough to see that those promises of status and security and so on and satisfaction that money makes, ultimately money doesn't quite deliver. Like all lies, it's half true. There's lots of reasons. I mean, I'll just tell you a couple. Have you noticed that we never quite have enough money? Do you know in Australia, and as I look around here, I'm sure it's true here. In Australia, we are now three times wealthier than we were in the 1950s. That's in constant dollars. Three times wealthier than in the 1950s and seven times the income of 100 years ago based on GDP per capita. Three times what we were in the 50s, seven times what we were 100 years ago. That means in Australia, all of us can be incredibly generous to other people. No, we're not. The average Australian family, mind you, gives less than a dollar a day to all forms of charitable giving. And do you know what? We don't think we're stingy. Why? Well, there's never quite enough money because yesterday's luxuries become today's necessities, become just, we don't even notice them. We've just got to have them. That's taken for granted. I'll tell you something incredible. Kathy and I just moved back from a little town south of Sydney, moved back into the eastern suburbs of Sydney, not far from Bondi. We're renting a little house, and you'll find this hard to believe, but for 3 weeks, three whole weeks, we have done without a dishwasher. Really? We didn't have a dishwasher. And I love to say to my kids, and kids, your teenage kids really love it when you have these kind of dad talks with them. Well, when I was a kid, we grew up in a country town. There were two dishwashers in our house. There was me and my brother. And before you finish that sentence, they're out the door. But yeah. And we used to chop the wood and light the wood stove to get the hot water to be able to take a bath. Were we poor? No, just everyone was like that. And then there's bracket creep. So now everyone has a dishwasher. Everyone has a plasma television. Everyone, overseas holidays are just taken for granted. And you've got to have an iPhone or your throat's cut. And so it just keeps ranking up. And have you noticed, you look forward to some new thing that you're going to get. You're going to get the house renovated, or you're going to get a particular new car, or it's some item of fashion, or some item of technology, or a sports equipment, or whatever. You look forward to it, and then you get it. And for about 15 minutes, it's fun, and then it's ordinary. And then it's the next thing, and the next, and that's why we never quite have enough. Or you rank yourself compared to your peer group. And the trouble is peer groups keep getting wealthier and wealthier, and so status, the goalposts keep moving. In 1974, back in Oz, a colour television was a status symbol. Not anymore. Between my parents and my wife's parents, four people, they own 9 televisions. My father has one about the size of his lounge room wall. It's not a status symbol anymore. And you know what? We get locked in to the way we live. Because we live, and I'm saying we, because we live up to our income or just above it, it's so hard to disengage. So we end up working crazy hours to maintain the mortgage and the expenses and to kind of get yourself out is almost, it's impossible. And I wonder if Zacchaeus had lived long enough to feel his dreams die. Have you? All those things that, you know, when he was 18 or 19, he dreamed of doing, and now he realizes he never will. And his dreams begin to turn to ashes. Or maybe, do you know what's worse? Maybe he'd realized his dreams. Maybe he walked out of his big expensive house and he stepped into his limousine, horse-drawn, but a limousine, stepped into his limousine, went to work, looked out the office window one day and thought, is this all there is? Is this it? Or maybe he felt his guilt. Maybe he realized that he'd lived his whole life ignoring the one who gave him life and wondered why he felt uneasy and guilty about the idea of God. And you may sit there and think, well, yeah, but that's all right, that's for him. Zacchaeus had been a criminal. He was, evil. He'd lived a bad life. I've been good. I'll be okay. I've been good. God will be happy with me. No, it's not the place to start. I want to say, it doesn't matter whether you've been bad like Zacchaeus or you've been good like no doubt you have, it's not the place to start. Being good, keeping the rules, is not what God wants, first of all. I'll give you a little illustration to explain. Imagine that you have let's go teenage daughter. Imagine you have a teenage daughter. As I look around, some of you will be able to imagine that very easily, but everyone, come with me. Teenage daughter. And you imagine that she's a really good girl and she keeps all the rules in the family. She keeps her room tidy. She cuts the grass. Do you say cut the grass? Mow the lawn? Whatever. Okay. She keeps her room tidy. She cuts the grass. And when she borrows the car, she brings it back and she puts some petrol in it. All right? Now, I know we're kind of moving to the area of science fiction here, but just come with me, all right? She's a good girl. She does everything that you ask her. She keeps the rules. There's just one problem, parents. There's just one problem, and that is she does not speak to you. She doesn't speak to you. She doesn't honour you as her father or mother. She isn't thankful for all of the things that you give her. She just takes the car keys, hands them back. She ignores you. She keeps the rules, but she has no relationship with you. She doesn't honour you or respect you. Do you know what? I have never met a parent that says that that's acceptable. It's not. What we want is relationship first and honour and respect, and the rules come second. Now, ladies and gentlemen, isn't that how we so often treat God? That we ignore God, that we take all the good things that he gives us, and man, this is a city that's just covered in good things from God. That we take the good things God gives us, in fact, life itself, and then we ignore him. And God says, it's not acceptable. Not acceptable. And you know what? What God says, if we spend our life ignoring him, refusing to listen, wanting nothing to do with him, come the judgment day, God will make the punishment fit the crime. He will send us away. He will send us away from himself, from all the good things he gives, to an empty, lonely, hopeless place. Jesus' word for it is hell, and he warned us about it again and again. I wonder if Zacchaeus had thought about that. Many reasons why he may have wanted to see Jesus, but he's desperate. See verse 4. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. I've checked it out. A sycamore fig tree is a tree with a short trunk and kind of wide horizontal branches. So a short little middle-aged guy could climb that. But you know what? As I've got older, I've understood the story better. I'm now 51, and I want to tell you, I don't climb trees. And in a culture where there's so much concern for face and dignity, this would be highly embarrassing. Right? Short, middle-aged man, everyone laughing at him. He crosses the pain barrier. He's prepared to accept embarrassment. And you know what? Maybe for you to turn towards Jesus, to check him out, to find out more, that may actually be just a little embarrassing. But Zacchaeus is desperate enough. He understands enough to need to find out. What happens, verse 5? When Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. Now, we're not told how Jesus knew Zacchaeus' name. Maybe it's kind of a supernatural appointment, divine God thing. Could have been. Or he might have said, what's that bloke's name? And then, that was a bit of strain. He said, what's that man's name? And then he said, but anyway, he said, Zacchaeus, come on down. Come on down. Now, in that culture, well, in pretty much every culture, I think, to eat with someone is a big deal, particularly in the Middle East. You eat with someone, you're saying that you accept them, you're one with them, you're friends with them. It's kind of, it's an arm around them kind of thing. And Zacchaeus is, he's a sinner. He is a bad man. He's done terrible things. And Jesus says, I'm with you. I accept you. Look at the reaction of the crowd. Verse 6, so he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Zacchaeus is delighted about it. Verse 7, all people saw this and began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner. You see, you mustn't confuse it. That is the value system of religion. The way that religion works is, I want to be good before God, and if I'm better than you, that helps me. So it becomes like a great water polo game. And that is, I'll push you down and I get lifted up, and that's the way they think. They look down their nose at Zacchaeus. Jesus doesn't, does he? Jesus accepts him, loves him. And what does Zacchaeus have to do? Nothing. Zacchaeus responds to Jesus' offer. And then in verse 8, Zacchaeus stands up and speaks. Now, I can't tell, we don't know whether what he says is before they eat together or after they eat together. I suspect it may have been after. But Zacchaeus stands up and he speaks. It's public and he's speaking to Jesus, but with everyone else listening. And look at what he says. Zacchaeus has actually understood God's generosity to him. I know because of what he says. Verse 8. But Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, right, speaking to Jesus, look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. This is the beginning of Zacchaeus' walk with Jesus. Why? First thing he does is call Jesus Lord. Lord or Master. And that's what it means to be a Christian. To follow Jesus. To have him as your Lord and Master. And here, in a kind of a shorthand way, Luke's showing us Zacchaeus has understood God's generosity to him. And as soon as that, as soon as you've been forgiven because of Jesus, as soon as Jesus is your Master, guess what? Your status doesn't come from money or what you own. Your status comes from the fact that you belong to him. That you're made in the image of God, that you're incredibly precious, that he'd give his life to bring you back. It's not money anymore. It's the fact that you belong to Jesus gives you status and value. And your security, that's not from money and so on. It's the fact that Jesus promises he will look after you. So all of a sudden, this man's been set free from the money and possessions master, and he calls Jesus Lord. And you know what that means? That means money becomes, money's not evil. Money becomes a tool that he can use to be generous and to look after people and to bless people. And so what does he say? Half his money he's going to give to the poor. Great generosity. And he says if he cheated anyone, he'll pay back four times the amount. Now, why four times? Well, as I've looked at the Old Testament laws, the laws given to Israel, in the book of Exodus, just after God gives them the Ten Commandments, he says, if someone steals a sheep from their neighbour and so on, steals a sheep, and then you get caught with kind of, you know, mint sauce all over your fingers and the lamb roast sort of thing, you have to pay back four sheep. You have to pay back four times the amount. And I think Zacchaeus is saying, okay, I'll keep the rules. I'm going to do what the Old Testament says. That was his way of bringing all that he owned, his life, even his money, under the lordship, under the control of Jesus. Why? Because he trusted Jesus. And what's he done? Generosity and trying to make restitution, to fix things up. Fixing things up doesn't earn forgiveness. Once he's been forgiven and he understands generosity, he wants to try and make things right and fix up the people that he's damaged. You can already see Jesus beginning to change Zacchaeus' life. To change who he is and how he acts. What do you reckon Jesus would change if he got hold of your life? You know, some of the things you may want to do with your life might be a bit painful. They might hurt a bit. And he's certainly done a lot of surgery on me over 30 years. But it'll be the best thing for you. He promises if you follow him, he will begin to change you to be like him. And you see what he says, verse 9. Jesus said to him, "Today salvation has come to this house because this man too, even this little tax collector, this man too is a son of Abraham." I don't think he just means this man is genetically descended from Abraham, you know, because he's Jewish. I think he means Abraham is the great example of the man who trusted God's promises in the Old Testament. And Zacchaeus, likewise, now is trusting God's promises through Jesus. And you see verse 9, Jesus says, salvation has come to this house. And back in verse 5, Jesus says, I must go to this house. Where Jesus is, there's forgiveness and joy and life. Now, I don't know if you've read much of Luke's gospel, but it's this beautiful story. If you've got your booklet there, I want to show you something. You see, Luke didn't have just like 100 little random stories that he threw together. It's just beautifully woven together. And each story kind of explains the one before, and they kind of build, and it's like it flows. They're woven together. If you have a look, there's six stories here that all fit together. Back on page 65 is the first one. You see there in verse 9 about the Pharisee and the tax collector. There's six stories, and what they have in common is all about how Jesus reverses the value system of our world. Do you see, we're used to the people with status and power and wealth being the ones who are accepted, and the ones who are praised, and the ones who, you know, end up on top. And all of these stories are about Jesus changing the rules. And all of a sudden, what Jesus wants is not status, power, success. Jesus wants humility. Enough humility to ask for forgiveness and to trust him. And so you see the six stories. I can't read them, but you might take the book at home and read it. See, on page 65, the Pharisee was the religious leader of the day. And the Pharisee was high and mighty and moral and good, and he looked down on everyone else and wasn't humble, and he's rejected. And the tax collector, who's lived a terrible life, throws himself on the mercy of God and is accepted. And then the little children in verses 15 to 17 on page 66. The little children, the adults say, no, don't let them near Jesus. And Jesus says, no, let the kids in. Why? Because the kids are the exact example of how you become friends with God. That is to learn to depend. And then the next one, the rich ruler, with all his wealth and power and morality, he cannot learn to depend on God. He can't humble himself. He can't walk away from his money. And he walks away. And yet the disciples who've given up everything will be blessed by God and gain everything in the end. And then look at page 67. The beggar, here's the great irony, the beggar is blind and yet he can see better than anyone who Jesus is, and he comes to Jesus, trusts him, and is given his sight. And then kind of at the end, the tax collector, Zacchaeus, the tax collector understands God's generosity and is able to be generous in return. And of course, the greatest reversal, look in the middle of page 67. The greatest reversal is God's King, Jesus. And how will he be crowned? God's King will be mocked, insulted, spat on, flogged. Why? He'll be crucified in my place and in your place. And God will put my guilt and your guilt, the guilt our conscience tells us about, God will put my guilt, your guilt on his Son, and Jesus chooses to die in my place. And in your place, and in Zacchaeus's place, so that we can be freely forgiven. You see, forgiveness is free for us. Just come and ask. But it cost him so much. Why does he do it? See verse 10, 19 verse 10. For the Son of Man, his way of talking about himself, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save what was lost. What does it mean to be lost? It means to be away from God. Zacchaeus was lost. I was lost. Are you lost? Do you want to come back? And remember I said, and look at the Bible and pray. I'll tell you the kind of prayer that I'm going to pray. It's just the same kind of prayer as I prayed a lot of years ago, actually, to give my life to Jesus. and read the prayer. I'm going to invite you to pray with me in a moment if you'd like to. Dear God, I admit that I have ignored you and not lived as I should have. Thank you that Jesus died in my place so I can be forgiven. Please forgive me. Help me to live with Jesus as my Lord. Amen. Now, I'm going to pray that prayer sentence by sentence. If you would like to pray after me, I'll pray a sentence and pause. If you would like to speak to God after me, you can. In the silence of your own heart, he knows. He knows us, hearts and minds. I'm going to lead us in prayer. Actually, what I'd ask, if everyone might just like to bow your heads, if you'd like to, I'm going to lead us in that prayer. If you'd like to pray after me, please do. Dear God, I admit that I have ignored you and not lived as I should have. Thank you that Jesus died in my place so I can be forgiven. Please forgive me and help me to live with Jesus as my Lord. Amen. I don't know where you are tonight. If you've prayed that prayer, be sure that God has heard it. And Marcus will say a little more about a next step that you can take. But just to say quickly, for everyone tonight, I hope that tonight might be a T-junction for you, in the sense that not to just kind of walk past Jesus and wave, say, nice night, thanks, but to actually have to make a decision. And the decision we make is this: will we turn and walk away from him, or will we walk towards him? You might be right at the beginning and you don't know much at all. You just think, yeah, I do. I would like to know more. Or you may have prayed that prayer and you need to get serious about following him. In a little while, Marcus will tell you about the next step that you can take. But the good news is the choir is going to sing for us again.